foundation stone laying ceremony of India's first semiconductor fab and the first indigenous semiconductor assembly and test facility. These semiconductor manufacturing hubs will have a very lasting impact on the entire nation. The ecosystem from across the globe will mobilize to have India as their preferred semiconductor destination. We will be creating more than 50,000 jobs in this journey, and this is just the beginning.
You just heard snippets from Tata Sons Chairman N. Chandrasekharan's speech at the groundbreaking ceremony on March 13th of the Tata Fab facility in Gujarat, as well as its assembly, test and packaging facility in Assam. The numbers are mind-boggling. The investments, massive. 91,000 crore rupees. Yep, you heard that right. That's how much the Tata Group is investing for its semiconductor fabrication facility in Dholera. As countries battle it out for chips, the setting up of India's first fab could be truly groundbreaking and game-changing. After all, semiconductors power virtually every modern device, from your smartphone to your EVs to your toasters. They represent the lifeline of the modern global digital economy. It's an industry that's expected to grow to become $588 billion in 2024, and as per reports, stimulate another $7 trillion in global economic activity annually. There's also the fact that it underpins a range of downstream applications such as AI and big data. But semiconductors is just a piece of the larger growth story that the Tata Group is betting big on. Another sector of focus for it is the electronics manufacturing segment. Tata Electronics is the only Indian vendor to Apple, helping the Cupertino-based company beef up its India manufacturing presence as it sets up its global value chains in India. From doubling down at its existing facility at Hosur to acquiring Wistron's facility in Karnataka, the Tata Group means business. And all of this helps prime the Tata Group as Apple looks to diversify its supply chain away from China. Just yesterday, ET had reported that the Apple ecosystem has employed more than 1,50,000 people directly since the start of the Production-Linked Incentive or PLI scheme, which was introduced for smartphones in August 2021. This makes Apple the country's largest blue-collar jobs creator. There is, of course, a larger story at play here. The government has mega plans of growing electronics manufacturing to $1 trillion in the next 5 years. And it isn't surprising then that the Tata Group is trying to take the lead in realizing this target. After all, the conglomerate's bets, be it Air India, semiconductors and electronics manufacturing or EVs, are all reflective of the country today and have been closely related to the Indian government's aims and aspirations. In today's episode, we go beyond the headlines and speeches. We talk strategy, map out possibilities, and flag challenges. We ask an author, an analyst, and an industry veteran to decode the conglomerate's plans and quantify the impact that it will have on the ecosystem at large. How is the Tata Group of today different from that under Ratan Tata? Are its bets truly audacious? How significant is it for India to have its own fab? How will all of this affect the supplier ecosystem? Where does Tata Electronics fit into Apple's larger diversification story? What are the biggest hurdles that the group is likely to face? To find out all of this and more, stay tuned. It's Tuesday, April 2nd. I'm your host, Diya Rekhi, and we start this financial year with an episode called Chip Country, How Tata Group is Powering India's $1 Trillion Electronic Dream, only on The Morning Brief from The Economic Times. Ratan Tata famously said, and I quote, "The biggest risk is not taking any risk. In a world that is changing quickly, the only strategy that is not guaranteed to fail is not taking risks." End quote. From its mega forays into steel and luxury vehicles by purchasing Corus and Jaguar Land Rover, to its current chip chase helmed by N. Chandrasekaran, the Tata Group's 156-year story is checkered with big bets. Some of them catapulted it further to corporate supremacy, others became bad croppers. We got Professor Sunil Mithas of MUMA School of Business, who has also written the book Making the Elephant Dance, The Tata Way to Innovate, Transform and Globalize, to decode what all of these new projects and big investments mean for the Tata Group and its strategy. Thank you so much, Professor Mithas, for joining us. Just to get the conversation started, Professor, wanted to get your ideas on how you view the Tata Group's bets, specifically when it comes to electronics and semiconductor manufacturing.
Yeah, so I think, you know, these are very interesting bets that Tata Group is making, and I would actually characterize them as big bets. So, you know, when you think about bets, there could be big bets, there could be hedging kinds of bets where you're not very sure about the future, and there can also be some no-regret kinds of bets. So I certainly view the newer bets that Tata Group is making are relatively more audacious to some extent, like, you know, their investments in, for example, electronics and semiconductor manufacturing. But I think they are pretty consistent with the very identity of the Tata Group and Tata Group's presence in sectors like steel and power, for example, right? They have been making these kinds of bets for a long, long time. And ultimately, the success of these kinds of bets comes down to the execution, right? How they set up the right kinds of governance processes, how do they set up the execution processes. But I'm quite optimistic. I think these are the right bets to make, given where the economy and the society is heading with respect to, you know, all the things that are happening with respect to artificial intelligence, other emerging kinds of technology. So these are absolutely the right kinds of bets that the group should be making at this moment in time.
So, Professor, then how do you view the Tata Group under N. Chandrasekaran versus how it was under other chairmen? What do you see as the biggest difference as someone who studied the group so closely?
I see a lot of change with continuity. In fact, they are still continuing to implement and, in fact, go big on some of the initiatives that Mr. Ratan Tata launched in early 1990s. At the same time, Chandra also brings in his keen awareness of the technology, what has been happening on the technology front because of his prior background while he was at TCS. And how now he's trying to infuse that understanding of technology and digital transformation across all the group companies. You will recognize that every leader, you know, responds to the times and opportunities of, let's say, economy at the time. So there were different challenges that Mr. Ratan Tata was facing in the early 1990s when the economy was just getting liberalized. Now we have different kinds of challenges that Chandra is facing, right? With all the technological changes that are happening, I think this is the right time for taking the group in a different direction with respect to technology.
I wanted to understand from your perspective what you see as the biggest challenges for the Tata Group at this point when it comes to these two bets specifically, electronics manufacturing and semiconductor manufacturing and packaging and so on.
I think my guess is the biggest challenge is going to be whether Tatas can continue to invest in high quality talent and attract, let's say, people of the kind that they have attracted recently, but be able to create an ecosystem within India to be able to create a pipeline for R&D, for example, so that the Tata Group can continue to make investments like these. So this has been a challenge. But the key question will be, where do they go from here? Will they be able to create their own, let's say, new technologies to give them an edge and maybe leapfrog ahead of their current competitors or other players in the industry? That will be a bigger challenge.
Now that we have an understanding of the strategy, it's time to get technical. Apple's largest suppliers like Foxconn and Pegatron already have large operations in India. Tata Electronics produces Apple's iPhone casing and enclosures. Last year, the company acquired Wistron's iPhone assembly plant in Karnataka's Kolar district to expand its capability in contract manufacturing of high-end electronics. Tata Electronics is also doubling capacity at its existing iPhone casing unit in Hosur. In January, the company said it would invest 12,080 crore rupees in mobile phone assembly operations. it also appointed Srinivas Satya, former country president of the Semiconductor Products Group at Applied Materials, as its chief supply chain officer and president of the components business at the company. Also, Randhir Thakur of Intel is now the CEO and MD of Tata Electronics. Here's Neil Shah of Counterpoint Research telling us the opportunity that this segment provides the company. Neil, tell me, where do you see the electronics manufacturing market going? And how much do you see it really growing?
So if you look at the overall opportunity, the end equipment market, right, if you include domestic consumption as well as export, it's close to $250 billion per year in terms of value. That will go up to almost $400 billion as we build out more 5G networks. We have more phones, more PCs, more laptops, more servers. And when you look at the overall semiconductors, which is going close to $2 trillion worth equipment, if you accumulate over the next 6 years, so the overall semiconductor opportunity is almost close to $600 billion, just semiconductors. So on an average, it goes from close to almost $50 to $75 billion to almost $100 billion per year at the end of this decade. Not even 5% or 6% of those semiconductors are manufactured in India. To some extent, like if you see Micron example, it is giving almost 70% of the overall cost, 50% from the federal side, 25% from the state side or provincial side, and overall 70 to 75% is being given to enter this space. The barriers to entry are lower for many players to get into this, because which has been traditionally very higher because it's a high capex, high opex type of investment which is required to build a fab.
And how do you think we should build that ecosystem around semiconductor manufacturing? What are the things we can localize? What are the low-hanging fruits?
Yeah. So as I said, there are multiple components to semiconductors. What all you can bring of that $600 billion opportunity for the next 6 years? So what can we localize in forms of logic, ICs, or memory? So we have to take what are the low-hanging opportunities right now. So we have taken in terms of packaging, right, for memory. For memory, we have not gone on the front-end part, but the back-end part, which is the packaging. So that is a long-hanging opportunity. What it does is it creates a precedence for India in terms of we are capable of producing back-end packaging, excellent packaging facilities. Malaysia is known to be a leading country when it comes to packaging. So if can India become the next Malaysia, right, in terms of packaging? And it also allows us to build talent to work in that fabs, to design those fabs, to maintain those fabs. And there will be some form of intellectual property which can be also built around it. So since many of these companies like Micron, Qualcomm, and Samsung and others have their R&D facilities here already, and almost 50% of a cost in a chip is not the chip hardware part, but the software part, which is already easily designed over here. So we cover almost as a combination 70% of the total cost of a chip, which is a great value addition, right?
So Neil, now moving on to specifics, right? Tata Group has made PSMC its technical partner. And when we spoke to the PSMC chairman, he mentioned that they would begin by producing 28 nanometer chips, and then they would move on to 22 nanometer chips. Do you feel this is a good move on the Tata Group's part, that is to begin with 28 nanometer chips?
If you look at the overall semiconductor market, right, you can split it into multiple applications, right? Memory, processing, power electronics, and then there's logic and other peripheral ICs. So there are a lot of these ICs. Obviously, the processor, right, which is being used in like a laptop or a smartphone or a server, they're very advanced node. So there are only two or three fabs globally, like Intel, Samsung, and TSMC, which can manufacture those at advanced nodes. Those advanced nodes are basically anything which is as low as or advanced as 3 nanometer right now to almost up to 14 or 16 nanometer. So that is the range where you have more advanced. But beyond that, where India is focusing on initially are called matured nodes, which is from anything above 14 nanometer, which goes up to 100 nanometers. And this is where the most supply chain crunch was during a pandemic because no one invested in these technologies. Everyone thought, let's invest in advance. But with the sudden deluge of so many laptops needed, so many routers needed, so many servers needed, these components are also essential because for one big chip, you need so many peripheral chips as well. And this is where the main application then this goes into are even smartphones to laptops to even aerospace and defense. So this is where India is focusing on, and this is the low-hanging opportunity because India does not have a necessary intellectual property or a company or a partner which can build an advanced fab right now at this point.
Neil, if I were to ask you, what are the hurdles you foresee? Because that's equally important to recognize, you know, our limitations at this point. So what do you think are the biggest challenges that a company like, say, a Tata, with all of its resources and, you know, deep pockets, could face while building this fab and this OSAT facility and even their electronics ambitions, like electronics manufacturing ambitions?
For any fab, we need lots and lots of good, clean water supply. Mm-hmm. So do we have that? Can we set an example that in Gujarat, which 20 years ago used to be struggling for water, even for domestic consumption, for different households. But it has changed with that Narmada project. And we have sufficient water. But is that water sufficient and clean enough to run the fabs? At the same time, electricity. Can we have uninterrupted power supply? Can we have good working condition and ecosystem of suppliers which can be set up around? What are the different policies respect to a particular state, particular nation? How is the subsidy being going to be given at particular time? How easy it is to do the business in a particular state? What is in terms of security for the overall fab when it comes? Can it be threat or a target for some bad actors? So how can you protect that? So there are a lot of other things where it could go wrong and where everything needs to be thought of when you are having a fab. Because this is one opportunity as a nation India has, and it has to do everything right to make it a strong precedence.
Here's something I read in a recent EY report that had my eyes popping out. Did you know that the semiconductor chip that is used within the Bluetooth and the Wi-Fi component of your smartphone can cross international borders as many as 70 times before it reaches the final consumer? Yes, 70 times. Oh, and the entire process could take up to 100 days, 12 of which are spent just in transit between various supply chain steps. Who would have thought, right? I mean, I certainly didn't. It's mind-boggling how complex this entire process is. The typical distribution of a smartphone value chain has players ranging from North America in the West to Japan in the East. Now, of course, the components themselves are as critical as the final device. But EY, in its report, basically said that the availability of critical minerals and the availability of ecosystem enablers were among the major factors that hinder a nation's ability to expand its capability to manufacture components. Here's Pankaj Mohindru of the India Cellular and Electronics Association speaking to my fellow TMBN Anirban Chaudhary on whether these ecosystem enablers are really in place to fuel India's larger electronics and component making ambitions.
How has an industry body like yours been trying to mobilize India Inc. or Indian companies to participate in the burgeoning electronics manufacturing boom?
Indian players, we have been consistently reaching out to strong groups within the country. In fact, you know, this is a project, we call it internally Project 100, where 100 Indian groups and companies, we are attempting that they should enter the electronic supply chain. So keeping all these factors in mind, the entry of Tata's is extremely good for the nation. And semiconductors is very, very crucial for the nation. Semiconductors is not all about big capital and technology. It is the most cutting edge in terms of the value chain of electronics. So for that, the entry of Tata's into both OSAT or ATMP, as we call it in India, and the fab is extremely critical. Also, the other two investments of Micron and CG Power for packing. These are very significant developments, and I think this holds very good for the future and for the achievement of our nation's vision of first $300 billion and achieving this big scale and developing the semiconductor ecosystem.
And Mr. Mohindro, what have been the government's initiatives or policies in trying to make India a global manufacturing hub for electronics?
Since 2015, there have been series of developments. We had a subsisting scheme, MSIPS, but there was an intervention in 2015 with the differential duty in mobile phones to encourage import substitution and build the scale, followed by the phased manufacturing program and the PLI. PLI was a very new concept, and we have seen how these three policy instruments have worked magically. Almost 2,000% growth in mobile phone manufacturing and a very significant growth in supply chain of sub-assemblies like chargers, battery packs, headsets, display assembly, etc. The intervention with the semiconductor policy, which is a very critical foundational industry, I think this is the best-in-class incentive package which government has stuck its neck out, and it is showing results, where 50% capital subsidy is being provided with on a pari passu. That is, a pari passu, just to translate, is that this is not post the event, but it is as you go by. As the company keeps investing, you keep getting the equivalent subsidy from the government. Say it's a $5 billion project, but you put in $200 million, you get $200 million from the government. And the state governments are also pitching in with 20 to 25% additional subsidy. I would say that this is the best-in-class incentive globally. And that's why, in spite of the fact that we are starting from ground zero, we've had these four projects announced, and groundbreaking has also begun.
Also, that brings me to the question, how is India's position globally in all this? And I'm talking both in terms of comparison with our neighbor and the global biggie in terms of a manufacturing hub, and I'm talking about China, and also in terms of taking advantage of this huge global pool of tech and talent when it comes to the electronics sector.
You know, this electronics has two elements. One, that, it's like a winner-takes-all principle. But the supply chain and investment has to be kept very open. Look at how our neighbor has built its industry. The import of electronics in China is over $600 billion. That's how they keep their supply chain on, and that's on very low tariffs or no, zero tariffs. So the industry is fed seamlessly. They export more than $900 billion. And they have a sizable domestic market. So we have to be cognizant about that the flow of technology, skills, manpower, supply chain, components has to be very easy and very light touch. Also, technology will come from global companies. The capital good companies or the aggregators will also play a very important role, and the design companies will also play a very, very important role. This is how this historic development, these huge targets which the nation has taken on and the industry is in sync with this is the only way it will happen.
Let's talk about the Tatas now a bit, and especially in terms of their two chip facilities in Gujarat and Assam. What kind of a knock-on effect do you think those facilities will have on the ecosystem as a whole and job creation in these two states?
You will see how this transformation of infrastructure happens there. And this industry, usually the direct to indirect jobs is 1:3 or 1:5. But in semiconductor, it will be more like 1:10, 1:15, in that range. So you will see where these plants are coming up. There'll be an extreme level of transformation in these areas. We have seen that in Hsinchu and over the last 30, 40 years, and even in lately in Shenzhen and other places, where with the concentration of high-tech industry, there has been a complete transformation from places which were fishing villages to, you know, large metropolitan swanky factories and buildings and high-tech industry. So this is a transformation which these locations will also head towards.
And what about industry-wide numbers? What kind of job creation do you see overall in this sector in the next few years, given the $1 trillion target that the government has for electronics manufacturing?
You know, this whole thrust which has happened in the last 5-6 years, reaching 100 billion, have created around more than 1 million jobs, direct and indirect. So if you keep the same rate and you go to a trillion, I think that we are looking at between 25 to 30 million jobs overall.
And finally, Mr. Mohendru, in order to reach that 1 trillion target, there needs to be tremendous inflow of both private and public capital. How do you see that aspect panning out?
So this requires a very large investment and the development of the investment community, you know, which understands, you know, which are venture capital, fund houses, private equity, which have a deep understanding of ecosystem. We also are, initiating discussions on setting up, sub-exchange, something like what Shanghai has, the STAR, S-T-A-R, where these are companies, can find good markets, because India will have to slightly change their structure of capital and governance, because as you move into more high-tech, the employees' leadership and employees become very important. If you study the semiconductor companies in Taiwan, you'll see that the so-called promoters hold a very little share in those companies, and the companies are widely held. So to that extent, also, Tata has this kind of corporate ethos where, you know, the typical regular conventional promoter holding, promoter family, etc., holding majority, etc., I think those will be a thing of the past. A very new kind of development of capital structures will happen, and a lot of wealth will get created.
Fabricating semiconductors has been widely called, and I quote, the most complex manufacturing activity humanity undertakes. Isn't that crazy? I mean, a recent report by the Information Technology and Innovation Foundation said that the design and operation of fabs is so nuanced and sophisticated that it takes into account details as minute and granular as the gravitational effects of the moon on assembly lines. That line in itself was enough to make me feel dizzy. The point the report was trying to make was that if countries wish to compete successfully for semiconductor sector investment, then the policy and the business environments they foster must be equally fine-tuned, well-crafted, and deeply sophisticated. The challenge confronting India is to create a business and policy environment that doesn't just attract one-off investments, but rather fosters the emergence of a deep and vibrant semiconductor ecosystem active in all the key phases of semiconductor production, whether it's research and development, design, fabrication, or ATP, which is assembly, test, and packaging. And also to have a network of suppliers and supporting institutions to power a globally cost and innovation competitive semiconductor ecosystem. The Tata Group setting up a fab is a huge milestone, and there's no doubt about it. The potential for India to be a hub for not just manufacturing, but also design is enormous and extremely exciting. As India slowly takes a bigger bite of the global electronics manufacturing pie, moving up the value chain and enabling the growth of the supplier and component ecosystem is going to be crucial. And that's where these audacious bets by the Tata Group will come in handy. As N. Chandrasekaran said in his speech, this is just the beginning. There's a lot more to come, so stay tuned. Thank you, Sunil, Neil, and Pankaj. It's Tuesday, April 2nd. I'm your host, Diya Reki, and you were listening to Chip Country, how Tata Group is powering India's $1 trillion electronic dream, only on The Morning Brief from The Economic Times. This episode was produced by Vinay Joshi, sound editor Rajas Nayak, executive producers Anirban Chaudhary and Arijit Barman. The Morning Brief drops every Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday and Friday. Do tune in to ET Play for all audio content, including The Morning Brief. You can listen to our podcast on all major podcast streaming platforms. Thank you for listening and have a great day ahead. All external sound clips used in this episode belong to their respective owners. Credits are mentioned in the description.